Please do get in touch if you want to be part of the debate today. You can text us on 51551, email saturday@rte.ie, or you can tweet to @SaturdayRTE. Now, we're going to start today with that policy that came out of the Incorporeal Cabinet meeting yesterday, what's been called a refusals policy, whereby Ukrainian refugees will be offered one accommodation option only on a take-it-or-leave-it basis. The Capuchin Centre in Dublin has become an unofficial hub of sorts for Ukrainians arriving into Ireland in recent days. And just before we came on air, I spoke to Lily Orlovska, who has been acting as an interpreter for the refugees and who has spent this morning at the Capuchin Centre. She said Ukrainians are just hearing today about changes in government policies for refugees. I began by asking her what she's been hearing from some of the men who have been sleeping in a gym since they arrived last week.
The main concern that they have is just that they might be sent to some rural area and they wouldn't be able to find the job, because the job, that's the most important thing for the men. They told me that they hope that they might not end up on the street. On the streets, because they still hope that they would be able to find a job and work here. They don't want to rely on social welfare. They want to work so they can have at least accommodation, so they would be able to do it in Ireland.
I know you've also been speaking to women, to a woman in particular who's currently staying with her son in a hotel in Dublin. Can you just tell me what her reaction was to hearing that she would just get one offer of accommodation and that she would basically have to take it or leave it?
First of all, she told me how grateful she was for everything that they have got from Ireland, from the government. They have accommodation. The only thing that they were given, €35, they had just to work very hard, just somehow to make the ends meet, just to eat and while having in pocket only €35. So it was tough, and they didn't know about Capuchin Day Center. As soon as they found out that there is a Capuchin Day Center where they would be provided with the free food, free meal, they were happy just to attend, and they come and have their breakfast and dinner in Capuchin Day Center. And they told me that they're so grateful that they, in the place where they're living, and because they can see people that are sleeping on the streets, and they understand how difficult it is for the Irish people to provide accommodation in those circumstances, and they understand that, and that's how they're so grateful, and they want to express that gratitude for what they got.
And Lily, I know you are spending a lot of time there at the Capuchin Day Centre in the city centre in Dublin. Are you seeing a lot of Ukrainians arriving looking for food?
Yes, there are a lot of Ukrainians that are coming and having their meal in Capuchin Day Center. They're happy with the quality of the food. They're happy with what they get, because Capuchin Day Center provides the shower also service in the morning, and not only, and also with some necessary things like toiletries and T-shirts and so on. So there are a number of Ukrainians that are coming to Capuchin Day Center for the meal.
And can I ask you, is that because they're not getting their meal supplied at the accommodation that they have been placed in?
Correct. That's the main thing. And that lady with the son, basically there are two mothers and two children. Two families are coming, and they were in the same situation. They were given €70 for four of them. So they were happy just to come here and to have food inside. And there are a number of ladies that are coming and have their meal as well.
And I know also that you have been talking and helping some Ukrainians who arrived here. They've been sleeping in the airport for the last week. Can you tell me about the two women in particular that you assisted, who had been refused temporary protection here and had to leave again?
Yes, there were two sisters that came from Ukraine, and one of them, she got temporary protection, but the other one, just because she, at the time when the war started, she was in Russia, her husband, he had a stroke, so she had to look after him, and only in June she was able just to bring him home because he wasn't able, she wasn't able to transfer him to Ukraine. And she arrived to Ireland. She told me, they both told me that they're not looking for any social welfare payments. They would like just to have an accommodation, and also they would like just to find some jobs so they can work and send money home so they can provide for the necessary medical expenses and care. For 6 nights they have been staying in the airport. So the very, I brought them some blankets so they can put up the floor because it was quite cold. And also they had the food from Kapuchinde Center. We were providing them with takeaways.
And that was Lily Orlovska there, who is working and helping Ukrainian, working as an interpreter to help Ukrainian refugees arriving here. Now, let me introduce my political panel who are in studio with me. We have Sean Fleming, Minister of State at the Department of Finance, and Fianna Fáil TD for Laois Offaly, Lynn Boylan, Sinn Féin Senator and Party Spokesperson on Climate Justice, and Éan Oríordán, Labour TD for Dublin Bay North and Party Spokesperson on Education and Justice. Minister, I know you were listening to Lily there. Can we just get a sense, where did this refusals policy come from?
I listened to Lily, and I think a lot of people will listen, will hear what she said, that she recognises the difficulties we're having in Ireland with the volume of people coming. I think people now know there's over 70,000 people have come into Ireland this year alone, both from Ukraine and from other countries, and it's something we've never experienced ever since the foundation of the state. So we are in a situation where I think the state and the people of Ireland collectively have responded as best we can, and we will continue to do more. And the situation is, one offer of accommodation is not a refusal, in my opinion. I think she said the issue is one offer of accommodation. And she said, what was very interesting in what she said, and I took from that, was she said, really, they're only looking for accommodation. And that is the essential element of what the government announced yesterday, was to provide accommodation. Many of these people are actually want to work. They're able-bodied people. Now, I know about 10,000 children are in school, and there's much more than that actually working. I met a number of Ukrainians last night in Portage, and mainly mothers who had children, and they're actually working, and they want to work, and they want to earn their keep, and they want to contribute, and they're satisfied with accommodation when they have the ability to get jobs, and they want to do that.
But isn't that the difficulty, that she was saying some of those men who are recent arrivals really worried that they'll be sent down the country to places where they won't be able to get work or won't be able to travel for work?
Well, you know, I'm from Portlaoise. There's nothing wrong with going to rural Ireland. Everything doesn't end at the M50. M50, I don't know who told them that. There is a life. There's 4 million people live in what they call rural Ireland. There's towns and villages all over the place. There are jobs in every county in Ireland. There are signs for vacancies in every town in Ireland for people to work. There is no shortage of employment.
Okay.
And there is nothing wrong with people coming to Ireland, having to be in areas other than in Dublin, and that's fair.
But,
and it's only fair that the people who come should be spread across
just
all
counties.
Just
getting back to the policy, though, is there evidence, or I mean, is this where this came from? Any evidence that suggests that Ukrainian refugees have been turning down accommodation offers to date? Because it does put the view out there that, you know, people are being picky here, and we're now telling them you can't be picky anymore.
Yeah, well, I think everybody here wants to help the Ukrainians, so I'm not going to pick on them. That's simple as. But what I am going to say
I'm saying is, to put that idea out as a government policy indicates it's a response to something.
Well,
I'm saying what is the evidence that we needed that response?
I'll explain. Because now what's emerging, that the months have gone by, is many of these people we now know won't be going quickly back to the Ukraine. And now they're going to be here for a much longer period than was anticipated when they came, when the war started. And now the Irish state is saying, the government is saying, now we have to deal with them in terms of normal mainstream accommodation for people who need housing. And in those situations, anybody on the housing list in Ireland does get an offer of accommodation. You won't get a second offer the following week if you don't like your first offer. You will get a second offer in due course, but you won't give, you won't get, if you don't like the first offer, you will give you a second offer.
Okay, and what happens
so that's
then?
They should, I would advise anyone who's coming looking for accommodation in the interim, take the offer that's available.
Okay.
Which
okay.
And that
fair
applies
enough,
to everybody.
If they don't,
I would ask them why.
Well, you can have all the conversations you want, but I'm saying if a family refuses to go to a particular location that they're offered accommodation in, what do
okay.
we do with that family?
What I will say is, and I've dealt with a number of these cases, many of these cases, there might be a good reason. There might be a child with special needs. There might be a mother has a health issue. And in those circumstances, yes, those rules would not apply. And they're not applying at the moment. But if a person would have to have a reasonable reason not to accept a first offer of accommodation. And if there are reasonable reasons, I think our services are well able to cope with that.
It's a dangerous narrative. I don't know where it's come from. I don't know anybody who has told me or Lynn or anybody that there's an issue with Ukrainians turning down accommodation. It's news to me. And I think government wants to be very careful that this doesn't seep into a minority opinion, which will come back to us as politicians. Sure, I hear they're turning down what they're being offered. Now, look, I would have strong criticism of what happened from the, in terms of this entire system, from the publication of the McMahon report in 2015 to Rod O'Gorman and the new department being put together.
Now, you were minister in charge of
direct
provision for two of those years.
Yeah, and I established the McMahon Commission, and we published a report in 2015, which was going to overhaul the system. Now,
You'll accept that's the easy part of it, though.
Well,
publishing the report that says what needs to be
done. Yeah, and it had to be implemented. And I felt there was goodwill around all political parties in order to do it. And I felt always that this section needed to be taken out of the Department of Justice, and government were right to take integration and asylum out of the Department of Justice because there was a systematic, uncaring, unsympathetic view in that department. So we have a new department, the Rod O'Gorman, I felt was actually making inroads into overhauling the system before the Ukrainian crisis came along. And I think we had a lost opportunity in those years to do something properly. On where we are now, I think other avenues could have been exhausted in previous months, like modular housing. There is issues around the amount of accommodation that was offered, from private citizens. But the issue always is
we know that modular housing has been an issue. There's been a difficulty in relation to getting modular housing up and running here for many years because there's objections to it.
Well, yeah, and I heard rhetoric during the week from the west of Ireland of an individual councillor didn't like the look of it. Look, we have to go beyond this. We have a moral and historical obligation from our own country's history in order to be as welcoming as possible. There's other countries have taken in 10% of their population. Czech Republic, Poland have 1.5 million. What I would say though is this, in terms of the issues that I'm dealing with now, in terms of the Crown Plaza in Santry, where we have young families who are going to local schools there in Darrendale, they have built up community links, they've built up friends, and now they're being asked to move out. Once you totally depend or disproportionately depend on the private sector for housing, any housing need, then you're going to run into problems. The state should have provided this housing from 2015 on, when it was quite clear the system needed overhaul.
I want to bring in Lynn Boyle, and just we've a listener has texted. Social housing has been on a take it or leave it basis for several years now. If you refuse public housing, you're off the housing list for a year, and you start all
over
again.
That's not actually correct. You won't be offered a second choice within the year, but you will remain on the list and you will be able to get an offer again in due course, but you're not removed from the list.
Lynn Boyle.
I think it's dangerous to be conflating the social housing list and the refugee crisis and emergency accommodation, and it needs to be very clear that they're two very, very separate issues. But this, nobody's denying that the numbers that have come in the recent times is a huge challenge for the government. But back in February, they were talking about 200,000 refugees coming from Ukraine alone. So there's been a failure to plan. And there hasn't been an all-of-government approach. It seems that Roderick O'Gorman's department is is expected to do all of the lifting, whereas in fact what you need is a whole of government approach. So we need the Minister for Housing to be on board, the Minister for Education, Minister for Health, so that we can put in place wraparound services. So if there is going to be modular homes going into communities, and if those communities already have a lack of resources in terms of access to GPs or in terms of school placements, then extra resources has to be put in to help those
communities. Is that not going to be part of the new policy, that there is talk now of a community fund for communities that do get an influx of refugees?
And that has to happen, but everything is just so slow. Like, there are, you know, there's 60,000 vacant holiday homes out there. The Irish Refugee Council had one of their recommendations right at the very start of this crisis was the government should approach people who have those vacant holiday homes, enter into a licensing agreement for 12 months so you have some stability and a nominal payment. That hasn't been done. We have tens of thousands of vacant properties across the country. That hasn't been done. Large unused buildings that could be refurbished. So everything is just so slow. And I do think it's because we don't have that whole of government approach.
Can I bring you back in, Minister, on the issue of direct provision? And in particular, there's 4,500 people who are now stuck in direct provision centres, have been for some time. Yeah. They have leave to remain, but obviously they have nowhere to go because of the housing crisis. Now, they're now getting letters telling them that they have to vacate those direct provision centres, that they will have to move on. Like, where do we think they're going to go? Are we actually, in the while we're bringing in an eviction order for the general public, that we're issuing, we've got a government department basically issuing eviction notices to the most vulnerable people?
You know, you're certainly overstating the mark. The situation has always been that when people get their legal status to remain in the state, in normal circumstances they would leave the centre that they're staying in, and they're now legal and entitled to be living here in Ireland like everyone else in the country. And the wish is always that they will now then move on to employment, or if they have an employment, be eligible for social housing like everyone else in an urban area rather than in the asylum centre.
Okay, where but you saying. Accept so these, are not, these are not normal times.
No.
We're in a housing emergency.
We're in a housing emergency, and those people who are in the asylum centres, who are legal now to stay in the state, are now to be treated like everybody else, to be entitled to go on the social housing list in the local authority area that you're in, or get employment in that area. So it's...
No, they've been told they have to move on.
What I will say on that is, yes, but there's no eviction or there's no immediate. Those letters, that has always been the case, that people... I'm going back
here... So we're just frightening
I just want to be provide information.
Yeah.
As long I have three centres in County Laois that deal with this, and as long as the people got their legal status, the requirement would always have been to go on the social housing list, which you're entitled to do, or to get employment, and to get to happen the social welfare assistance.
But
payment.
Are they entitled to stay in the direct provision centres? Because they're being told they're not.
There has been absolutely flexibility on this all along. That rule was always there.
And you're saying that despite these letters, that hasn't changed?
I'm saying that has always been the case, and there is flexibility. But where people can leave a centre, where there's somebody else needs to come into the centre, and that person can go on a housing list and get housing assistance payment or employment in the local town or wherever they choose, and the space is needed for somebody else coming into the centre, it's not unreasonable that they take assistance from the local authority to get housing rather than staying in the centre where they are.
Yeah, we have had a long-term situation. Sean's right, we have had a long-term problem with people in direct provision who had their papers and could have left, but the housing wasn't available to them. And there was a kind of an understanding that it may take some time to expedite that. But I mean, I would go back to the cultural issue within the permanent government, which has gone back for decades. When I was in the Department of Justice, we were constantly told about the issue of pull factor. There wasn't ever really a sense that they wanted to radically overhaul and have a humane asylum system because of the issue of pull factor. And we were constantly told that. So that's why, I mean, I take what Lynn's saying about the Radical Gormans Department not being able to do everything. I am glad that Justice aren't completely in charge of this. But I do feel that we have, this is an opportunity for us to totally overhaul and have a much more humane system, because our statistics in terms of granting refugee status over the years have been poor. And I think there's possibly a different attitude towards this because the nature of the refugees who are at our doorstep. They are white and they are Christian. And that does change people's mindsets. And we have to challenge ourselves as to why that is.
You have recently been rallying objections to a housing development in your constituency.
Mm.
And people will hear you now and they say, well, you know what, if we were less concerned about issues around planning in your own constituency, we might have less of a problem in housing.
I reject that.
Refugees because there's
any amount of planning applications that go into my constituency that I make no reference to, I have no objection to, they go through, and I make no comment on them. I am against planning applications that are put on playing pitches that are not zoned for housing. That's what I have a problem with.
Lynn Boylan.
Just, I think, look, the issue around issuing letters to people who are in direct provision, who have right to remain in the country, is really cruel, because does the government honestly believe that people are living in congregated settings, sharing rooms with people they don't know by choice? They have nowhere to go. And the minister's saying they can go on the social housing list. The social housing list is already very long. These people are trying to find accommodation in the private rental sector, which anybody who's paying attention will know there is just not the volume of properties out there. We are in the middle of a housing crisis, and all of these problems around the emergency accommodation for refugees, the direct provision centres and people with rights to remain, it all comes back to the housing crisis, which the government just don't have a grasp on. You're just not getting a handle on it. You're missing all of your targets. This goes back to the housing crisis.
Now we're getting into the conflation of issues. The Irish people across the board are doing their best for the Ukrainians, and now to bring it back into people who are on the housing list and the housing list. Yes,
Sean, you did that. You're saying that people can leave direct provision and go on to social housing list.
Or they can get employment and get rent if they have employment.
A lot of people in social housing are employed. Yeah. So make a distinction that people who are in social housing are working.
On the housing list.
The issue is they can go on the housing list, they can go into the private rental sector. There is no accommodation. Where are they to go? A lot of people in direct provision who have right to remain to work are working. They have nowhere to go.
Can I just put to you, Minister, the homelessness figures that came out in the last couple of days? Yeah. Now almost 11,000 people, the highest ever number in emergency accommodation, more than 3,000 children in emergency accommodation. Yeah. Today in the Irish Times, the economist, Dr. Anthony Leddon, he's saying that the government now, ploughing billions into failed policies is not going to fix this. The quote is, even the most ardent supporter of government policy must recognise that this policy is headed for the proverbial rocks. And the policy he's talking about there is housing for all.
Well, I think everybody knows we've actually built more houses in the last 9 months than we did in all of last year. We'll have 28,000 new houses built this calendar year. It's the biggest number in 14 years. And if somebody is saying that's the wrong policy, I don't know what that mean. We have to build more houses. That's actually what's happening. I'd like to build more and more. But we'll have more this year than we had in any year in 14 years. We'll have more next year.
Do you really believe that the policy as it is working out now is actually going to solve the housing crisis in any time, in any sort of a medium?
We're in a catch-up phase. And if anyone doesn't accept that, there's a big housing need when this government came to power. We're now building more houses. But it is taking time before we can reach the targets we want.
And we're doing it this year and next year.
And 45,000 houses have been granted planning permission and apartments in recent times, which can come on stream next year.
But can I make a small point? Just on, a lot of these families have fallen to homelessness, and the children, is it as a result of evictions, right? And for months, the Labour Party, other parties, were pleading with government about an eviction ban. And we were for months told by the Taoiseach and other ministers that there was a constitutional issue with it. The AG wouldn't sign off on it, even though it had previously done before in 2015. And now the government have finally come to the conclusion that we needed an eviction ban, and it's been brought in, and that's welcome. But the minister, you have to concede that when these things were genuinely being brought forward by opposition, in a way to be constructive, and in order to prevent families falling into hopelessness and to homelessness, the government just didn't listen until the very last minute. And that's what makes people so frustrated with trying to encourage government to do the right thing.
OK, can I just, before we leave housing, I just want to put you that story in the front of the Irish Mail today, Len Boylan. Comments from your party's housing spokesperson, Owen O'Brien, that a senior civil servant should be fired because of his position on housing.
No, and look, it was an off-the-cuff remark, and of course the civil servant shouldn't be fired. He shouldn't be advising on housing, though.
Owen O'Brien stood over those remarks when he was asked about them.
Well, the civil servant shouldn't be fired. The issue is there are the experts, not just Sinn Féin, who are saying we need to spend more public money on the provision of social and affordable homes. The ESRI are saying that. And anybody who thinks we can deliver the scale of social and affordable housing that we need without investing more public money into it. Do you mean, so that's where that comment came from. Do you mean, but of course he shouldn't be fired.
Did he or did he not say he should be fired?
It was an off-the-cuff remark at a music festival.
But he did name him.
He did not, no.
No.
Absolutely not. I was there, he did not name him.
He didn't name him?
No.
But it was clear everyone knew who we were talking about.
It was a tent in Roscommon.
But it was a public event, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I'm saying, of course it was, the comments, do you mean, we're off the cuff, but he should not be fired. The issue is that we do need more money invested in public and social housing. That is the reality. The ESRI have said it. The government need to accept that they have to invest more money in public, in social and affordable housing, because we are in the middle of a housing crisis, missing all of their targets. That is the reality. Okay. And the ESRI agree with us on that.
Just before we leave the issue, do you believe it's ever appropriate for a politician, particularly a politician with ambitions to be in the next cabinet, to say that a senior civil servant should be sacked for holding a particular policy position?
No, he shouldn't have said it.
Okay, we'll leave that there. We'll take a break.